coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation. It's your host, Doug Hagman.
And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this very special investigative series, this investigative report. You know, headlines are fleeting. The time spent on each headline appears to be really growing less and less as the direness of the situation or situations increase. And a lot of times people look at the headlines and wonder, well, okay, how did we get here, or why, or who is behind the various things that we see, fleeting and, really just, how can I put this? Driving the actions of the deep state, driving the actions of the government. So in this special investigative series, which will be a four-part series, I will give you solid, researched information about who is behind everything that we're seeing today. The corporations, the oligarchs, the plutocrats, the tyrants, and only the most obtuse among the population will refuse to believe the findings I'm about to present in this special investigative series of reports. I ask humbly that you not only take notes or take note of what I'm about to give you over the next few days, but also download this video, subscribe to Rumble, download this video, bookmark HagmanPI.com, because as we enter into 2024, further into 2024, we are going to have to be armed with this knowledge. We need to be precise. And again, you know, only the most obtuse among the population are going to refuse to believe the facts I'll present. Only those involved in the conspiracies or who are complicit in what is taking place will call it nonsense, or a conspiracy theory, of course. But in my three decades of experience as an investigator, you know, I know that you and I, all of us, we must be precise. We must be precise in our identification of those responsible. We must be precise in the methods, manners, and modus operandi of the planners, of the plotters, the schemers, the people who are embedded within our government, within our communities. And when I say government, I'm talking state, local, and federal. We need to be precise in, as well, in our understanding of how we got here. And while you may think now how we got here isn't important, we're here, let's deal with it. This is going to, I believe, give you a better understanding of the centuries-old conspiracy that has existed and brought us to this point. In fact, some of the same families, if you look, the 13 families, the 13 bloodlines, that's not a conspiracy. That's a real thing. Again, telling us who is complicit, who are the drivers of the agenda, who want you to eat bugs. Oh, sure, we can name Klaus Schwab, we can name Harari, and so on. But that's just the tip of the iceberg. There is so much more. And understanding how we got here will help us understand, in my opinion, how we can work our way out of it. Can we work our way out of it? I believe we can with a thorough understanding and God's help. Absent of either No, we won't be successful. When we look at what's taking place today, the fact that we had a stolen election in 2020 and really nothing changed. Nothing changed in 2022. Well, why not? Who was responsible for this? What are their names? Because we can tune into many programs and you can hear the terms deep state thrown about. You can hear the terms or even the World Economic Forum. You can hear all sorts of names and different organizations. But let's go deeper than that. Again, for the purposes of understanding, for the purposes of fighting back. And that's important because the people right now who brought us to this point are terrified. And you know what? They're terrified of you and they're terrified of me. They're terrified of all of us. And this is something I committed. We, Eric the Tech, myself, we committed to take to the road, to meet with people for our own planning and strategy sessions. And that's what we're doing. To fight the very people, the very organizations, to identify them, to expose them, and again, to fight them. But these people are scared. They're scared of you being knowledgeable. They're scared of you being awake. And most importantly, they're afraid of all of us fighting back. Because I'm talking roughly throughout the entire world, really about 1,000 or so people, but very key positions, very key people. And again, this is a multi-part series. This is a result of days, weeks, many, many hours of research, investigation, verification of facts. Now, what I'd like to do is right up front, give you some required reading. When I say required reading, I say these are the books that will help you understand what's going on and even what we can do about it. Books like Controligarchs by Seamus Bruner. Very, very good. In fact, I'll be citing from that book in this series. The Real Anthony Fauci. That's important as well. Controligarchs on your screen there, if you can see that. That's perhaps one of the most comprehensive books I've ever read. Contemporaneous information and comprehensive. The Real Anthony Fauci. Dealing with specifically with Anthony Fauci, but with the people around him that brought us to the brink of global disaster. But it didn't happen by one planning session, one event 201. It didn't happen just with that. There was a history there. And that history, well, it tells a story of who else was involved. So, also, other books, such as books, The Committee of 300 by Dr. John Coleman. Any book, and I say this, any book by Trevor Loudon. Those books are the books that I have used as a source, in addition to further investigation that involved direct interviews off camera, that involved a lot of research, again, off camera. Now, as you watch this, Eric the Tech, myself, we're taking on the mission, a very special purpose of talking with, meeting with individuals to hopefully mitigate false flags or at least amass information to share with you, because we are doers. We're just not talkers. We're doers. And we have to, we must, we absolutely must act, because we see we're close to. And again, look, the headlines are fleeting. The situations are fluid. You're looking at civil war. Well, is it civil war? Is it revolution? Is it both? You're looking at states' rights. You're looking at so many issues right now. It's a powder keg out there. But I want to get right into this to discuss really how we got here. This is part one of a multi-part series. I ask again, very humbly, I ask the viewers and listeners to watch the entire series before you make any judgments or whatever. I'm going to try to keep it very precise, very concise. And I'll be looking down, my apologies, as you look at this, I'll be looking down at my copious notes, many pages, again, a lot of information. I will be showing you some photographs. I have a clip or two, a video clip or two, and this is one of the things I've done. Your time is valuable, so I'm not going to put a lot of videos out there that you've seen undoubtedly before. About Harari, what he's spouting off, or Klaus Schwab, because you can find this information relatively easy. This is information that is the backbone, or really the spark of what's happening today. I want to start off now. During my programming, I have spoken about the Good Club. Even before I get into that, we often speak of, and I mentioned about being precise, we often speak about oligarchs and oligarchies. Well, what is an oligarch, or what is an oligarchy? Because, again, this is extremely important that we are precise in our language. An oligarch is a tyrant. It's what many call the elite, one of the elite. An oligarchy is a society, if you will, and it's on the screen right there. Government by the few. But it doesn't have to be, nor is it necessarily, or even in practicality, anyone that's been elected. For example, the World Economic Forum is an oligarchy, and Klaus Schwab is indeed an oligarch. He's not been elected to anything, but what he has done was created this non-governmental organization with the help of many other influential people, from Henry Kissinger, right through the present leadership. But, you know, it didn't start with the World Economic Forum. It didn't start with Klaus Schwab. So hold that thought. Because something happened that we need to, that I would like to address first, that kind of sets the stage for the World Economic Forum, past and present. For example, and this is one example that I have. I'll tell you what. The oligarchs, since I mentioned that, people such as, let's name names here, people such as Bill Gates, Jeff Bezos, Ted Turner, Michael Bloomberg, Warren Buffett, Mark Zuckerberg, George and Alexander Soros, Elon Musk. I had to put him in there to be accurate and fair. Organizations such as the Rockefeller Foundation, organizations including BlackRock, Vanguard, State Street Capital. And you know, the reason those people were identified is when we speak about COVID and the response to and the results of COVID, the destruction of the middle class, the destruction of people, and the mandates, the absurd mandates. Well, who is behind that? Is it only the medical associations, the WHO and so on, and so on? No. This is part and parcel to the belief, the ideology, and the driving actions of these oligarchs I mentioned. And what's the motive, at least the monetary motive here? I've gone over this before. These people I mentioned collectively have made more than $5 trillion with the COVID pandemic. Just those people I've mentioned, not including the organizations. For example, Bill Gates alone, his net worth grew by 33.7% during the COVID lockdown period, which he advocated and celebrated from 2019 to 2022. But we have also generations of power in the Ford families. Yes, even today, the Vanderbilts and the Carnegies. You've got to understand, again, their influence on today's events. So the who, not the organization, but the people, the suspects, and the people that we have to hold to account especially include, but are not limited to Bill Gates, David Rockefeller, George and Alexander Soros, Ted Turner, Michael Bloomberg, Warren Buffett, and, oh yes, Oprah Winfrey, the Hawaiian resident who just happened to escape the Maui conflagration. And then we have the CEOs of companies and corporations such as Cisco, Blackstone Group, Tiger Management, and others. I'm naming these, and you folks, you can look these up on your own. And I'm going slowly, deliberately, so you can do just that. Write them down or play this back, whatever. But in 2009, the people I mentioned got together in New York at the Rockefeller building on the campus. They met at Rockefeller University, which is the hub of the Rockefeller empire, especially the biomedical empire. It was in May of 2009. The individuals I mentioned got together there. For what? Well, the topic was health and overpopulation. Now, remember, this is 2009, a decade before the SARS-CoV-2, COVID, whatever you'd like to call it. And during this meeting, these individuals, including Oprah Winfrey, as I mentioned, well, the meeting itself was convened by Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, and David Rockefeller. But what they were doing was planning out how to handle overpopulation and how they could do it through health and what kind of health mandates they could use and health plans that they could implement to depopulate the planet. They were all heavily invested in Barack Hussein Obama and Biden. Remember, we're talking 2009 now. So all of those people I mentioned that comprise what is known as, and you can look this up, as the Good Club. As a matter of fact, in the show notes, page two, they're called the Good Club, and they want to save the world. This is by The Guardian, or in The Guardian. This appeared on May 30th of 2009. Now, I'll say this. That's a very charitable and generous headline, when in fact, they don't want to save the world. They want to run the world. Not only run the world, they want to make or remake the world in their own image. So in modern times, it began in 2009 with a meeting of a group of individuals from Bill Gates to Winfrey, as I mentioned, meeting at the Rockefeller University to discuss health and overpopulation and how to depopulate the world. The meeting again was convened by Gates, Buffett, and Rockefeller. And each one of those who in attendance were heavily invested in the campaign of Barack Hussein Obama and Joseph Robinette Biden. If you think that today, what we're seeing today with the open borders, what we're seeing today with the various other crises that we are experiencing, it didn't happen just because of a stolen election. That was their manner by which to implement. But it began in modern times, this century, it began in 2009. And the issue discussed there, global crises. They want, and also they wanted and want to cap the world's population. Some say 8.3 billion, but that number is tossed out for people, for others' edification. The bottom line, it's much, much less. Now, how did they do that? How are we going to do that? Well, the Good Club talked about investing money, and they did invest money into abortion and infanticide. They ran programs and plans and gamed out how to curb world population. That Guardian article that you see up there, of course, they want to serve humanity by reducing it. And this is all about population control, population reduction. And they, the unelected, want to rule over every single aspect of our lives. Those people poured more than $1.5 billion into contraception, as well as infanticide, abortion. As a matter of fact, since that time, they've poured enough money. Well, that $1.5 billion alone, I'll just leave it there. It's enough to terminate well over 3 million unborn children, unborn babies. Try to wrap your head around that. And do you know who was really friends with this group of people? Who was on the periphery of the Good Club, who was palling around with people like Bill Gates? Of course, Anthony Fauci. Now, after the 2009 initial meeting of the Good Club, they developed this global response to a hypothetical pandemic. Go figure. That was a decade before SARS-CoV-2 or COVID. Now, I want you to compare something, because this is important when we look at the historical aspect of this. The Rockefeller Foundation, back in 1901, did the exact same thing. The very place where the Good Club met was meeting in 2009. In 1901, associates, along with the Rockefeller himself, Sr., as well as associates, met at the Rockefeller University in New York and discussed the exact same thing. And wouldn't you know it, roughly 18 years hence, we had the Spanish flu. Compare that. The Good Club meets in 2009. A decade later, we have COVID-19. Now, if you fast forward, and I'm going to be going at different time markers because it's related to the subject as opposed to the just only the time. And you can, again, you can write this down chronologically or however you want to, or you know, understand this however you see fit. But in 2010, and you've heard this discussed, but how much do you really know about this? In 2010, the Rockefeller Foundation, had a training exercise, and I know you've heard this. You've heard this from Alex Jones. You've heard this from many other people. It was Operation Lockstep. That was their training exercise. You've heard it, right? Operation Lockstep. Can you define it? Do you know what that was all about? Folks, in page 3 of the show notes for this series, I have the original PDF document from May of 2010 that outlines Operation Lockstep. I'm giving it to you, obviously. It's there for you to read. And the source document for Operation Lockstep. And see, Operation Lockstep was just one component of a bigger report. And that report is Scenarios for Future of Technology and International Development, sponsored by the Rockefeller Foundation and the Global Business Network and other NGOs and individuals and so on. So you have this. I would urge you to read it. I'm not going to read it for you or get involved in pulling everything out. But if you scroll down to page 11, this is what many people reference. Many people say, well, this has been planned. Or you can, yeah, that's fine. You'll see it. I think it's page 11. Operation Lockstep. Up or down one, I'm not sure which. Let's see. Down a little bit. Are we past 11? Maybe it's 18. I'm not entirely certain. But folks, regardless, look, there's the document. It has many aspects, many, many things involved in the planning of the future of humanity. There it is right there. Scenario narratives. Operation Lockstep. So if you want to know where this came from, or if you hear Alex Jones talking about this and somebody says, well, that's just made up, or it's a conspiracy theory. This is where this comes from. From the Rockefeller Foundation document in May of 2010. It's right there. A world of lighter top-down government control and more authoritarian leadership with limited innovation and growing citizen pushback. Kind of a look into the future, no? Well, okay, that was in 2010. In advance of SARS-CoV-2, another thing that you heard about, which was Event 201. That's been, folks, you've seen it. I'm not going to go into it. You don't, I mean, you can find it. It's all over the place. But that was a consequence of, where did that come from? It was after 2010, the Rockefeller training exercise, the Operation Lockstep. And before the October 2019 event, Event 201, was something that many people don't know about. And that is ID 2020. Now, how many people have heard about this? This is a Rockefeller / Gates digital ID push. And there's a Wikipedia, I think that's Wikipedia. Yeah, that's a Wikipedia entry about ID 2020. Now, the thing about Wikipedia is anyone can edit it. Anyone can add to it. Anyone can say it's a conspiracy theory. Anyone can misrepresent what it's really about. But this should give you at least a starting space to look at the digital ID push. And what's that all about? Well, as Operation Lockstep, from Scenarios for the Future of Technology and International Development to ID 2020, from this, Gates, Rockefeller, with the World Health Organization, the push is for vaccine passports right now. But failing that, as they have, they need something else. What's that something else? Well, as identified in ID 2020 and other related documents, they're looking at things like, well, we need a absolute digital ID because of climate change. Yes, you heard me correctly, climate change and social justice. Now, these are not my words. Folks, I am not saying this. They're saying this, and you can verify this yourself by what? By listening to what people are talking about. When you talk about climate change, you're talking about a global carbon footprint. And of course, they've got to reduce the carbon footprint. Never mind that people like Lurch, you know, John Kerry, and so many others take their private planes over to Davos, whatever. And to hell with their carbon footprint, they're allowed. They're allowed to eat meat while you eat bugs. But they've got to hook onto something, whether it is a pandemic or a climate emergency, which this, oh my goodness, to hear them speak, we're facing climate apocalypse. And if that doesn't work, or in addition to that, even if it does work, the inequality, the social issues facing our planet, the population, because these people care so much, they talk about social justice. So you talk about cans of worms, one being climate change, one being the plandemic, plural now, perhaps, and also the fairness, the social justice. Now you're opening up the playbook of the oligarchs, as I mentioned before, the global tyrants. Now, who is financing a lot of this? Well, believe it or not, you and I are. But Rockefeller funding has a lot to do with this. And if you want to get the carbon footprint down, or if you want to handle climate change properly, and if you want to really be kind to your families and neighbors and such, well, we have to enter into other things they are talking about, such as selective breeding, contraception, eugenics. Rockefeller funded Nazi experiments. They funded forced sterilization, selective breeding, and eugenics. They have funded that from really the beginning, from 1901 through the present. They're still funding that. As a matter of fact, John D. Rockefeller, and this is something that's important, a little bit of background. John D. Rockefeller Sr., he was the, if you want to know who he is and don't want to look it up, he was the founder, the head of Standard Oil, the largest monopoly in America. He controlled 95% of the U.S. petroleum industry. It was really from the ground to the rail to the pump. And, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Do you know how he maintained for the longest time his monopoly? The use of lawfare. The use of lawfare to pick off any competition. What are we seeing today? Again, the same playbook, different people, because John D. Rockefeller has gone on to his great reward. Maybe not. Maybe it wasn't a reward. But we're seeing the same playbook. Lawfare to pick off competitors, whether they were business or other. What are we seeing today? Lawfare? Lawfare refined to pick off competition, especially in the political realm. Okay. Now, by the early 1900s, and again, this is important, Rockefeller had some reputation problems. Believe it or not, people with a ton of money, they were looked upon as somewhat pariahs. Hey, why don't, you know, you got all this money, why don't you do something good with your money? So Rockefeller hired a PR guy. And this is important. You might think it's not, but again, contextualize this for the current environment. He hired Baptist minister Frederick Gates. By the way, no relation to Bill Gates. And he was pushed to create philanthropic causes. Now, these were not true philanthropic causes. No. But this was a manner or a method. This was a way to get into the public health arena. Because, remember at that time, before 1900 in New York City, infant mortality was horrible. Did you know that before 1900 in New York City, 1 in 5 infants died from things like smallpox or tuberculosis or cholera, typhus, diphtheria, yellow fever? And did you know that 25% of young people, both boys and girls, male and female, died before the age of 30? Did you know that? That was in New York City. One of the most developed worlds or developed nations on the planet. And this was our death rate. So Rockefeller, seeing that, said, hey, you know what? I could get some good PR, create some organizations, and say that we're helping reduce things like smallpox, TB, cholera, and in fact do, in a couple of cases, do some good work, but for the most part, use that as a cover for the more nefarious things, like reducing the population, yes, even then, or like creating injections to reduce the population or kill off the population. Enter the Rockefeller Foundation, post 1900, 1901, into the early 1900s. Yellow fever vax. the 17D strain. The Rockefeller Foundation, the scientists, the people, again, the people who created this biomedical research laboratory in New York City, where the Good Club met in 2009, in the early 1900s, in 1937, they began human trials of a vaccine called yellow fever vax 17D strain. And you may say, well, do I need to know this? Well, again, the more things change, the more things stay the same. Same modus operandi. If you look at the continuous course of criminal behavior, you can see a lot of things stick. So, they, the Rockefeller Foundation, said, okay, we're going to do some human trials. So they injected 1 million people in Brazil. They, and as a result, determined the vaccine, the injections, the yellow fever vax 17D strain. Hey, it's safe. We did the human trials. Whoops. Let's fast forward. Wait. What they also did was between January of 1941, what was happening in 41. Let me think. That's right. World War II was forming, and a lot of comparisons can be made to SARS-CoV-2 and replace, for example, Rockefeller with Fauci or Collins or with NGOs, Ralph Baric, for example, but you can replace the names. But again, the manner, method, and schemes and plots are the same. So between January 1941 and April 1942, because our young men were going off to war, they injected, this was massive, they injected some 7 million U.S. military recruits. There was a problem. And does this, I mean, you can relate, there was a problem. Even though they did this human trials, right? It was found that the vaccines were tainted with hepatitis B. And there was, sadly, illness among the U.S. troops. Now, we got through that. But isn't that interesting when you think about it? What did they do with the coronavirus so-called vaccine and our military? They mandated that, just as they mandated it back in 41. Nothing's changed. But back then, the botched 17D vaccine, more than 300,000 were infected with hepatitis B. More than 300,000 infections in U.S. troops with the hepatitis B vaccine. That's the basis of our medical and vaccine system. Think about that. That's who you're putting your trust in. These people, the Rockefellers, the bedrock of our medical, the whole medical system right now. The developer of that shot, Max Thieler, he was appointed director of laboratories in New York. Can you believe it? So he also, along with others in that same group, were awarded a Nobel Peace Prize in medicine and given all sorts of money to control, for example, yellow fever. That just gives you a basis of the early years of how we got to where we're at. Oh, there's so much more, folks. I hope you found that bit informative. Now we're going to start talking. Stay with us.